Welcome back to Running. As promised, we turn now to the candidates for school board seat D. And a reminder, once again, this is not like the assembly races. We all get to choose one of the four among the registered voters of the municipality of Anchorage. And in the case of seat D, we are guaranteed a new face. One of these four, the incumbent, John Steiner, has completed his allowed third term at this point. So we will have new blood, new ideas on the board one way or the other. So the four hopefuls are Trey Taylor, Gretchen Guess, David Neese, and Roman Romanofsky. Let's begin with those brief 30-second introductions, which I suspect you are all very familiar with at this point in the campaign. Mr. Taylor.
I'm Trey Taylor. I'm running for school board seat D. I'm motivated as a taxpayer and as the father of three beautiful school-aged daughters to make sure that the school district maximizes the value of every taxpayer dollar spent and provides the excellent education our children deserve. Both my parents were teachers in the public school system, and I'm well aware of the problems our schools face. My parents taught me conservative values, honesty, integrity, hard work, personal accountability, and the value of sticking within a budget. These are the values that I will bring to the school board to ensure that our schools become superior schools.
Ms. Guess.
Thank you. My name is Gretchen Guess, and I'm running for school board. I grew up in this district. I'm a parent and a business leader and a former state senator. I'm running for school board because I have a passion about education in my hometown. I believe education is a community issue, that we need to focus on a vision and a plan for excellence for every child, and that the school board should lead that effort. I want to bring a positive, experienced, and common sense voice to the school board, and I look forward to your vote. Thank you.
Mr. Neese?
I'm David Neese. I'm a teacher in the Anchorage School District. I've been working in the Anchorage School District since 1983, so I've lived through all the budget increases and all of the pay things that have gone on with teachers and watching the new schools get built. I think I bring the insider's voice into the discussion in the school board. Education is more an art than a science, and I think that it is important that you have somebody on the school board that can say, that looks really good on paper, but we'll see how it works.
Mr. Romanofsky.
Hi, I'm Roman Romanofsky, and I'm your youngest candidate for school board. I got into this race because I'm concerned about the way that we're headed as far as our district budget, and also the way we're headed as far as being able to control how that budget is spent. Right now, we have federal mandates that are controlling the allocation of funding in our school, and I'm here to bring control back into our local hands and the hands of our community. I'm fighting for parental control and student-teacher accountability.
Well, stay right with you, Mr. Romanofsky. Is the budget too large or misdirected?
I'd say...
Or is there a third option if you'd like to present it? I'm sorry.
I'd actually go with both or all of the above there. I think that right now the budget is tied to oil revenues. We get two-thirds of our budget from state. The state gives us the money. And, you know, the oil isn't going to be around forever. It's great that we have it right now and we can spend this money on our kids. But, you know, when the oil dries up, what are we going to do? So we need to think about long-term solvency for the school district and without, hopefully, you know, decreasing our services too much. But, you know, we're definitely going to need to refocus our funds.
Mr. Neese, from the classroom perspective.
From the classroom perspective, there is plenty of money in the ASD. It takes about $450 million to have the schools on, lit, heated, teachers, bus drivers, food, special ed. The rest is overhead, is probably the best way to describe it. So how you take a look at those numbers, I think the discussion in Anchorage needs to be, what do we need in our schools? Well, you're going to have kids, you're going to have teachers, you're going to have principals and staff. The stuff that's after that, I think it's the part that needs to be discussed. We're going to be in budgetary woes probably for the next, probably for the term of the people we're serving on the school board for the next 6 years. And you have to take a look at what it's costing you to produce what you're doing.
Budgetary woes for 6 years? You're nodding yes, Ms. Guess.
I think so, and it reminds me of my days in the House and Senate. I think one of the issues, and it's hard when you're running because it's a lot about sound bites and things of that sort, is I've read the 600-page budget, and in there is not a good analysis of what we're spending our money on and what value we're getting. And so the question about, is $820 million too big? I think all of us would say, given our experience, yes. But do we really know what it's being spent on right now? And I would say as a community, we don't. And so taking that careful look on why it's increased, why you only have $450 million in the classroom, and how we can move more of that money in the classroom, I think is that first approach we need to take.
The 820 would include, say, capital, too. And
that's it. That includes the payment on capital,
yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Taylor.
I think our school budget is out of control. You know, when it doubles over the last 10 years, but our student test scores have remained average, I think that's problematic. And that's part of my platform, is to bring more personal accountability to the school district, from a superintendent level to the administration level, principals down to the teachers and specifically the students. And I think, you know, when we have a support staff average, our national support staff average is well above national average. And I think that there are a lot of areas that we can save. Our administrative costs grew by 26% from 2008 to the 2009 school year. So I think that's the first place we look to try to get control. And I agree with what Gretchen had to say. There's a vague picture of what we're spending our money on, but it's not clear. And that's the first area we got to start. We got to make that clear. Then we got to decide what we need as opposed to what we want, and start making those hard decisions.
Concerning the support staff and accountability of, and this came out in the previous half hour, there are fewer students than in the 90s, the cost is greater. But we do have a different student makeup. A few years ago, Creekside had 13 different languages as primary other than English. We have increasing students with disabilities and special needs. How do we support them? How does that work into the budget?
I think it's not a new problem. It's not a problem that other school districts aren't facing. We still spend more on per student than most school districts can ever dream of spending in the nation. Yet, like I said, our student scores are remaining flat, and. As far as the different languages, there's solutions all over the country. All we have to do is look. For example, one of the highest rated high schools, according to U.S. News and World Report, is out of New Jersey, and it's called a newcomers school. And basically, those kids that don't speak English as a primary language, they go to the school, and they spend an average of 1 year there before they pick up the necessary English skills in order to survive in a classroom with English-speaking children. And it's been a huge success. And that's one of the things I think we're falling short on in this school district. We're not looking to see what works. We're not taking the things in our school district that are working, like charter and alternative schools. And we're not taking those examples and putting them and helping the other schools adopt some of those things that are working.
Mr. Knees, I can see the wheels turning.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I have visions of you thinking of particular students and your communication.
Yeah,
how is your Hmong
and
Spanish?
My Hmong and my Spanish are a little rusty. Besides the job I do at teaching, I work at the airport, so I get a lot of people that are multinational out of the airport. And universally, most parents, regardless of the language they speak, come in and they want their kid to get an education. They want a good education. And that's difficult when you don't have the basic language skills. And we have the ELL program in the Anchorage School District. I really only get to see like the junior high model. That's what I've been in the whole time. But they do pull them out for all of their language arts and all of their reading classes and teach them basic English. It'd be nice for us if we got like some basic Hmong or something like that also. But I like that idea. I thought that was a great idea. If you could get them all in one school, let them mix, a little UN kind of thing going on. The problem is that your population always moves. The biggest thing you've got is, if this was my classroom, three of you would probably be gone by the end of the year. I mean, the transition rate inside the Anchorage district is huge. People walk in, and I just had some kids pick up and leave 1 week before the SBA, so those SBA scores are not counted to my school. I'm going to call one parent up and says, can you just keep your kid here for four more days? I know he's going to help my school's SBA scores. And it was like, no, we're off to a new school.
Romanowski, as you pointed out, you went through the district here. How has it changed, and what do you think is the impact of all the different student types.
Well, yeah, we do have a very, very diverse student population. And it'd be nice if we could teach to every language, but that's just not fiscally possible. You know, we got to, you know, English is pretty much the standard. If you want to produce in this society, you need to know English. So getting them started on English is incredibly important, because if you walk into the school and you don't know the language, how are you going to learn? But and then another problem is most of these kids that don't know English, their parents don't know English either. So how are the parents going to be involved in their children's education? So these are huge problems.
Any ideas on that? Because that has been something that's confronted the school district, is how they want parental environment or involvement, but how do you do that?
Yeah, it's really hard too. You know, I was talking to this parent just last week that is trying to get involved. And he's an English-speaking parent, so there's not a language barrier, but he just can't get his teacher. His kids' teachers to communicate with him. He wants to know what they're supposed to be learning each week. You know, just give me an email. He's begging his teachers, just give me an email. Let me know what my kids are supposed to be studying, so that when they get home, I can hold their feet to the fire and make sure that they're up to date on everything. It seems ludicrous that we can't just have syllabuses emailed to all the parents so that they know where their students are supposed to be learning, what chapters are supposed to be on in their textbooks. You know, we definitely need to have more accountability as far as that's concerned, more focus with the administration, making sure that teachers are participating just as much as parents.
I would agree that we don't have clear and consistent communication with parents. It's very whether the teacher has that talent and that time or not. And we need to make it easy for teachers, I think, easier to communicate. I talked to one teacher the other day, and she said, yes, there's this web system I can go on and I can put things on, but it's so cumbersome that the tech guys come around and teach me all the workarounds. So, technology is a great way that you can reach, I would bet, 80% of the parents out there, and we don't use it. We don't ask for email addresses. We don't have, and say, unless you tell us, we're going to email you. So there's some really easy things that I think we can do to make it also easier on the teacher. Also, you know, when I reflect back, you do wonder what the principals and the assistant principals are doing. I mean, some of this stuff is fairly consistent communication. And the school, I think, needs to be responsible and take a little bit of that load off of the classroom teacher and get that message out to parents. On the flip side, on the other thing that I think we need to do on parental involvement is also make sure teachers know how to integrate parents. I think we assume that all teachers know how to do that. That's a skill set. And depending on the parents, and if their English isn't their first language, you can integrate those parents into the classroom, into their child's education. But let's not assume that every teacher knows how to do that.
I think this kind of leads to a question which came up in the last half hour, and that was the vision. And actually was forwarded to me, left as a message on my phone when I came in today. So this comes from someone who's going to be listening very intently, well, not just that individual. We have the kindergartners today. 12 years from now, they'll be going into their senior classrooms. They'll have gone through Mr. Nees, unless he's elected and can't be there anymore. But what is going to be in their classroom? What would you like to see there for them? Come to think of it, you will all turned out by then. But your legacy would be there. Mr. Taylor.
I see a classroom that's not bound by the walls of that classroom. We've got awesome technology out there that'll help educate our students, and they can be courses and offered at the high school that they want to take and they're interested in taking, or as part of what they would like to major in college, or as a vocation they'd like to do as a skilled worker. They should be able to take those courses online or at the local university and get high school credit for it. I think we think inside the box so much, and we're so worried sometimes, and it makes the school district nervous to try new things, to try out things to see if they work. I mean, we need to take those chances, because I think what we're doing now is not working. We are not increasing the value of the education that our children are receiving, and we've got to be able to do that. And I think when you allow teachers to to think outside the box. You allow students to think outside the box, take classes from somewhere else. I think then you start to inspire students to become greater than they are, and I think you inspire parents to take more of a role in their students' education.
Romanowski.
Well, you know, if we can survive, you know, and make the school solvent, hopefully we can do that. Students should have a lot of opportunities in the future. You know, I see leveraging, you know, mobile technology. Everybody's got either an iPod Touch or, you know, a cell phone that's connected to the internet. And there's a lot of interesting technology coming out now. California has this free textbook initiative where you basically can get online and just they have textbooks online for free. You know, there's lectures that are online for free. So kids could be using their mobile phones to watch video lectures online, getting their classroom information while they're at home with their parents, stopping it, rewinding it when they don't understand a part of the lecture. And then when they get to the classroom, they can get more individual attention because the teacher won't need to give that lecture to the student. They can just spend time with the students that need it, and the students that already understand can be helping the students that don't understand it yet. So,
a heightened personal responsibility involved right. in education.
I'll jump in.
Okay, thank you.
I think that the main thing that you have to look at is your kids have to come out of your system with at least some basic knowledge. I was having a discussion with another colleague, and I said, when I was growing up, we had three TV channels, everybody listened to America Top 40. We had a common experience. These kids have no common experience. They're day-to-day, in and out. They're kind of dining on everything that's out there. And school is the only place where you can give them a common experience. You can say, okay, here's our country's system. Here's how we do our elections. Here's what we do. This is why it's important to vote as a citizen. That's where you pass on your country's values in the school system. And so somebody is coming out, and England did this with the open university system, where you could go on TV and you could take your courses and stuff like that. And I think that's really good to be able to go out and explore those opportunities. But at the same time, I really don't want somebody that's entering kindergarten now to come out in 12th grade, not have the opportunity to go to university if they've worked hard. But walk out with no skills that they can use. The skill set they walk out with 10 years ago didn't translate into the marketplace because computers were not really online a lot. Most of the jobs, most of these kids are going to have five careers. And you have to have a flexible knowledge base in order to do that. You have to be able to go out and get stuff. You have to be able to problem solve. You have to have a work ethic. And you install that in the school system. So the school has to pass on our country's values in the school.
Ms. Giss, your classroom of 12 years hence.
It is. I think it's a movement from success for all to excellence for every child. It really is a focus on the individual child and create a system, whether it's with teachers or with technology, that really allows a student to work where they're at and be successful where they're at and then move on. That there wouldn't be a student in kindergarten or 12th grade who's bored or who feels so far behind that they can't think that they're going to be successful. We know we have schools that works in now. We know there's systems out there. There's great technologies that do the flip, as was said before, where some folks watch the lecture on tech, you know, online, and then get the help from the teacher. So it really is that shift that we would have a system that really wants excellence for every child, and that's going to look slightly different for every child, but I know we can do it.
Now, you all had visions, but we all have to survive the budget process of 2012-2013. As I mentioned in the previous half hour, $6.7 million federal jobs bill saved 82 positions, or was used to cover 82 teaching positions, delved into the fund balance and other ways of restoring high school secretaries and a lot. And it could easily be as bleak and as hard decisions for whoever has the fortune or misfortune to be elected and make those decisions. What are you going to target and still enable that vision to continue? I'll take a volunteer to go first. Mr. Taylor.
I think the first place we can look to save money is in our buildings. Right now, our buildings are running at 70% capacity, a lot of them. We got to make better use of those. At the same time, we have charter schools that like to form that are looking for places to be, and they can't find a suitable place for them to rent in order to run their schools. Why not rent to them? Why not? We might have to redistrict a little bit to make room for them. But that's a great solution. We're still building new schools, and the schools we're building, as I say on my website, they're Taj Mahal schools, and they don't need to be. What a child needs in a classroom is a teacher that cares about them, that's willing to do the things necessary to help that child learn. They don't need the monuments outside the school. They don't need the immaculate buildings that we're building. Clark Middle School, excellent example. $65 million to build that school, despite a leading construction estimate that said, hey, you should have been able to build that school for $20 million. We could have built three schools for that price. And what do we get? The promise was that the nicer the school, well, the kids will feel like we're spending money on, we care about them, their grades will go up. Well, the opposite has been the effect. We see their grades trending down. And yet we have these charter schools and alternative schools and subpar buildings where the education they're getting is excellent. And so I think that's one of the main places you can save a lot of money is to scale back that. We've lost our student population is going down, yet we've added almost, I think it's 32 football fields worth of building space to the school district since 1996.
Now, that would be capital money,
right,
through the bonds.
Right.
And the classroom would be operation. Do you see the Anchorage voters saying, well, we're not, and you being able to convince them perhaps, mm-hmm, we're not building new schools, so let us raise how much we can collect in property taxes so we can do these things, because we've got to, if we follow what you're saying, we have to switch that property tax from capital investment perhaps to operating, albeit with efficiencies, but we do need a lot of money.
We have a wonderfully generous population that live in Anchorage that have given the school district all the money that it needs to succeed. The money's there. We just need to allocate it in the correct spots. And I think that we've lost focus. We've lost focus on where the learning occurs, and that's in the classroom. We should be doing everything we can to support the teachers, not to support an administration that continues to grow and suck up some of our best teachers. Our best teachers need to be in the classroom. And some of those ideas that I had with technology that I alluded to earlier, the more kids you have taking online courses, free up more teachers to help those kids falling behind. I mean, there's solutions out there. We just have to think outside the box, and we need to really evaluate what is a need and what is a want and make decisions based upon that.
So do you see us reaching the point where the Anchorage taxpayers will say, no more schools, but I'll be happy to see that general operating budget increase in
only if we explain where the current money's going and the value to the taxpayer. And we're not doing that right now. As a community, we're not having that dialogue. The district's not doing that. And they shouldn't. And until we can explain how the money's used, until we can explain why we've had such the increase in growth per student, we shouldn't even ask the question.
Cuts for next year.
They're never any fun. So Traig and I are in agreement about this. You focus on the classroom first, and you build your budget. And in my way, it's kind of circles. And you go out and you figure out where the circle ends. We have, when you go through that 600-page budget, an incredible number of departments that are about $1 million. Four or five people, two admin assistants. They're all very hardworking, and I think they all probably bring value, but probably not as much value as what's going on in the classroom. So you have to look at the administrative side. I was also pretty disappointed, I understand why they did it, but pretty disappointed that the city this year started doing things like charging the school district for the tax assessment. Last time I checked, it's the city's responsibility to collect taxes, and they turned around and billed the school district for that. So let's figure out what is a school issue, and let's fund that through the school budget, and then what's a community issue? And really, I think that's where a good dialogue with the city on where they're going to step up and what our community issues that we're using the schools as a vehicle and what are really education issues, and let's get the education budget back to educating.
Mr. Romanofsky.
Well, I'm a chef, so I know how to cut stuff, that's for sure.
Cleaver now, huh?
Yeah, no. The first thing that I would put on the chopping block is the SROs. They're special resource officers. Right now, the municipality said the school district has to pick up the tab for having these police in our schools. And, you know, I went to Chugiak, and I don't think we had SROs back then, and I don't understand why we would need them. We have security officers. They're pretty much mostly all minors in the schools, and I don't think we need to be making criminals out of children. It kind of creates an atmosphere of fear and tension, you know, and even if I'm driving down the road, I have my seatbelt on and everything, you know, all my license and everything's in order. And when a cop pulls up behind me, I still get a little bit nervous, you know, and I think students would feel the same way. So that would be the first thing. I don't think we need police in our schools.
Time, and I'm sorry.
Well, you have to start with the basics. I don't believe that you need to have $2.4 million in the budget that is non-departmentalized employees. Walk in there, first day school board, raise my hand, go like, I'd like to make a motion that we cut that out of the budget. If you can't figure out where they go, why do you need them? If you can't put them in a department, why do you need them? So start there, start with the maintenance. I think it needs to go back to what we had when I started. You need to have an operating budget, so people say, okay, lights and heat and stuff, and the capital budget. We need to go back and fix these schools. They merged that together, everything got very fuzzy, and all of a sudden we doubled the amount of money we're putting into the Anchorage School District. If you cut every administrative job over at the head shed, only saves $8 million.
Well, thank you. I want to thank the four candidates here for seat D. Remember, voting, they're at large, so everyone votes for one of them. Trey Taylor, Gretchen Guess, David Neese, and Roman Romanofsky. And a reminder, if you missed a portion of tonight's program or would like to hear the candidates again, you can go to the KSKA.org website. The assembly races are already up, and I've been told tomorrow you four, along with the other two, will be joining them. So thank you so much for listening and being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.